Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, thanks for having me back, and thanks for everyone listening in.
We wanted to talk about three main things today. The first one, home building and construction-related stocks continue to show up strongly in the Inc. Edge rankings. Some of them have been big winners over the past year, despite pundit gloom about the housing market and new home construction.
That's right, Jim. Well, on the 16th of February, we published our February Top 40 report, which looks at the top 40 ranked stocks based off of our Inc. Edge criteria. That's a quantitative criteria based off of value, insider commitment, and price momentum. It's not anything kind of subjective that we pick here at Inc. It's just how the stocks do in the rankings. And yeah, the home building and construction area fared very well. They've, in fact, got the top two spots. I guess you could even argue they got the top three, because the third, the number three stock is a steel stock. Usually you need some steel in a home building, but yeah, they've done very well, and it's defied a lot of the gloom. I mean, you don't have to go very far in Twitter to find, over the last few months, a number of analysts predicting downturn in the U.S. economy because housing's down, that the whole sector is down for the count, the American consumer is finished because their homes are, you know, going to be, are heading, their equities are in their homes are heading south, and it's just not turned, that's just turned out not to be the case in terms of either the American growth prospects, because last time I checked here, the Atlanta Now GDP forecast for the U.S. was 2.5% annualized growth in Q1. There's been no recession call yet, despite numerous analysts declaring that the U.S. has been in a recession. There's still been no recession call. Technically, yes, there was two quarters of negative growth last year, back-to-back, which by some definitions is a recession, but the committee that officially in the U.S. determines what is a recession looks at broader measures of that, including changes in income and the like. So they take a little bit more sophisticated approach in terms of what determines a recession. No call yet. So the fact of the matter is that in Canada, where a lot of these stocks are focused, we've got a situation where, yes, the Bank of Canada has been raising interest rates, as we know, and that is a big headwind to housing. But the Trudeau government has been increasing not just immigration levels for permanent residents, but they've also been bringing in a lot of temporary residents. So, you know, just on the permanent resident front alone, it looks like, we're targeting as a country for 500,000 residents, new residents very soon. I think it's 2025, right? So we've got this natural demand for housing. Now, I'm not going to sit here and guess how this is going to be resolved, that you have this demand for housing while you have affordability through high prices, high interest rates makes it unaffordable for a lot of people. But there's a demand. We know there's been some supply, but there needs to probably be more supply. How is all that going to get reconciled? I don't have the answer to that, but it will get solved somehow, and somebody is going to have to either build some new homes, that's likely where it's going to come from. And there are companies that are positioned to do that. There are also, you know, finance companies that could benefit from the mortgages that would be related, but they're not the ones that are showing up on the screens for us as much. It's the builders, the ones that are going to provide the materials for new housing supply. So that seems to be the way our signals are suggesting those who are upbeat on housing would play it.
Right, 500,000. We don't have enough homes and rental spaces for the people who live here. Where are we going to put 500,000 more a year?
Well, and that's...
And can we build them fast enough?
Well, and the other problem is the market mechanism won't really encourage development in some provinces where there are rent controls. And, you know, that just takes away some of the incentive for new development. So there is a problem. There's a structural problem. But I cannot believe that politicians want to see newcomers to Canada camped out on the streets. Now, you know, but sadly, there is a group in Canada that are poor, who are forgotten, and we don't have to go very far in Vancouver to find those people, unfortunately, who are really out on their luck and don't have a home. But, you know, it's a relatively small group, and I'm not trying to minimize it, but politically, the politicians can, you know, have been able to, without repercussions at the polls, you know, let the tent cities grow and, you know, to a certain levels where it's not hurting politicians at the polls. But if new Canadians come, that especially those that have families attached here already, that'll be a different story. So this issue is going to have to be resolved. Let's see how it gets resolved over the next year. It seems like the market has come to the conclusion that we are going to get new supply in Canada. But let's just see how it happens. I don't know how that's going to happen, but there seems to be some optimism in the market that it will happen.
Well, since John Cabot discovered all that cod off Newfoundland, Canada's always been a nation of immigrants, sometimes in huge waves, and somehow we always find a way to cram them in somewhere, somehow. And they're very hard-working people who want to be here, and they definitely don't want to live on the street because they probably had to from where they came from.
Jim, these newcomers to Canada it's the one arrow in the Trudeau government arsenal that they have to promote growth, and these newcomers is the growth strategy for the Trudeau government. And I say unfortunately because I don't think that's enough. Now, to be fair, yes, they do have some other industrial policies that they're trying to sort of get up to speed, such as in the critical minerals area, and we can talk about that in a minute. But the big bet has been on more immigration, and, you know, so they've got to take care of these newcomers because they are the big bet that the government has made that's going to drive the Canadian economy forward.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, the white gold rush is on, with lithium and other battery metal stocks continuing to make their mark in our, or in your rankings. Five major top 40 lists this month. Some people are saying, oh, EVs are dead, it's a fad, but it doesn't look that way according to this.
Well, just on that, I was listening to Bob Hoy, I love listening to Bob every week on House Street, and I know he's got a view that EVs are a fad. I would just point to some of the data out there in terms of what's happening with original equipment manufacturers like Ford. Ford just this week announced that they're making a $50 billion investment into EVs, and they're laying off workers, unfortunately, to help pay for it. And we've got the Tesla Investor Day coming up on March 1st, but we'll hear about their production plans and, Tesla production. I believe, you know, their target is thereabouts 50% a year, which is quite remarkable growth a year. So we'll see. I mean, I understand there are arguments that the EV revolution cannot happen because we don't have the minerals for it. And I am sympathetic to that because, to be honest with you, where we stand today, there is going to be a shortage. But we've got a lot of entrepreneurs globally and in Canada that are working to address that situation. And so that brings us to, where are we with the white gold rush? And as a little bit of background, Credit Suisse analyst Zoltan Pozsar came out with a framework where he said, you know, in this kind of post sort of 2019 era, geopolitically charged era, there's three kinds of gold. There's black gold for, you know, what we call fossil fuels. There's white gold for lithium and battery metals. And there's the traditional yellow gold, the bullion. And so when it comes to the white gold, you know, we would consider that to be lithium and other battery metals, such as, you know, copper and cobalt and nickel. And these are going to be in, not only in demand because of the assumed EV growth, but also because of their realignment between China and the G7 as, you know, wanting separate or non-dependent supply chains. So doesn't mean it's going to be the most efficient industry ever in terms of human ingenuity, but we will probably have two tracks of EV production in the world because politics wants it that way. Doesn't mean it makes sense, but it does. That's kind of how we're headed. So we have this mad scramble in the West now, the G7, to develop our own supply of battery materials and processing, and that's being driven by big dollars, by the Inflation Reduction Act in the United States, and that's, you know, another reason why I don't think the EV revolution is dead, if for no other reason, that the Biden administration is handing out big checks for people to buy EVs in the U.S. So one can debate whether that's a smart policy or not, but that is the policy, and those are the cards we're dealt, so those are the cards we'll play. And the interesting thing now that's developing in the G7 aligned EV space is that there's really kind of three competing approaches to getting the lithium out of the ground and into the supply chain. There's been the big sort of evaporation pool techniques that you see mostly in South America, where you've got big mining operations pulling brine out of the ground and having to dry it out so it can be processed. That's very environmentally intensive. The competing approach is sort of the hard rock mining that you see in Canada and in Quebec, where there's a massive rush right now in Quebec to because of the Patriot battery metals play in northern Quebec, the Corvette play, where you can pull out essentially get your lithium out of hard rock mining. That's had a lot of attention lately. The biggest producer, though, in the world from that approach is in Australia, I believe. So this is a new development that Canada is now a player or emerging player, and you've got a lot of Australian involvement in Quebec minings, as it turns out. But there is a third approach that is emerging in Alberta and a few other places. It's called direct lithium extraction, where you've got a number of players looking to extract lithium out of oil wells. And what's interesting about this is that the environmental footprint is much smaller, because it's what we call a closed system, where you take the fluids out of the ground from the oil wells that are already there, so you don't have to go through a massive environmental permitting process, you know, as you would with a new mine. And then if it works, you know, you just pump it, the residual back into the ground. Problem is, this hasn't been done at scale before, so it's experimental. Will it work? We don't know. But there's a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs in Alberta trying to perfect that, and there's a couple of other applications of this around the world. I would say sort of in the G7 block. There's in the U.S., there's a company that's getting closer to actually producing it, and they're testing out the systems in a large scale. And there's hope in Chile that instead of doing these big evaporation pools, they've got some deposits that they can use this direct lithium extraction. But again, it's early days, so we don't know if it's going to work. That's where we're at. And so we've got this white gold rush going on to see who is going to be able to generate that we're going to see in the G7 going forward. And, you know, Europe, you know, has another driver there. I mean, they're talking about banning, I believe, internal combustion engine sales in the 2030s. I believe it's 2035, if I'm not mistaken. Again, these can all be pushed back and changed. So I do, pardon the pun, take it with a grain of salt, but that's where things are headed right now. Could they change? Could Bob Hoy's prediction be right? Sure, you know, because there are constraints. What if this lithium brine direct lithium extraction process doesn't work? What if the costs are too high with hard rock mining? I mean, there are still a lot of risks out there with this. But as I said, there's lots of entrepreneurs trying to find economic deposits and get embedded into the supply chain. Look, we've just seen some big deals this month. General Motors, $650 million investment into Lithium America, based off of the, you know, contingent that they get their Thacker Pass project approved. But that's big money. We just saw an investment today by announced today by LG Chem into Piedmont Lithium to secure lithium from Quebec. So yeah, you know, it's in motion. The white gold rush is on, and there's lots of ways to participate in Canada, and they showed up in our top 40 this month, but also in that sort of the non-lithium space as well. In the rare earth and nickel is also there. So battery metals, another area of opportunity in Canada, and that's front and center as we head into March here.
I'm wondering, is there any way to filter lithium out of oil as you produce it, so that you're not just a fossil fuel producer and getting energy that way, but if you can get the lithium out just as you pump it out at the mine site or at the refining plant, you would be making both sides happy, the pro-fossil fuel people and the environmentalists.
Well, Jim, you know, maybe that's the holy grail that Imperial Oil is looking for when they made their investment into a Canadian direct lithium extraction developer in Alberta.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, Imperial Oil, which is a subsidiary of Exxon, the largest, the largest publicly traded, integrated oil, major in the world, they've got their eye on it. So, we'll see. I mean, the current, approach is to look at areas that I believe are not, necessarily, producing, but I could have that, I could be mistaken on that, and I think we'll see. Again, this is kind of early days to see how it's come, how it's playing out, and, that could be part of the mix. We'll just have to see. It's a good question, and I'm not 100% sure on that. The first step right now is to prove that the technology works at economical, price point. So we're going to know pretty soon. We've got a number of preliminary economic assessments coming out. We've got tests coming out. I mean, things are happening very quickly in Alberta. This is not an area you want to sort of come and check in on again in a year to see what's happening. This is happening now because governments want it to happen, and rightly or wrongly. Again, those are the cards we're dealt, and those are the cards we'll play.
Going on to traditional yellow gold. Yellow gold stocks are moving up in the rankings, also with five names this month in your top 40. Insiders seem to be suggesting monetary risks are rising, and for the last 5, 10, 15,000 years, we seem to like the very malleable gold-colored metal.
Yeah, it's interesting that we've seen a pickup of these stocks in our rankings, and to be honest with you, I can't put my finger on sort of what's driving it, aside from, you know, the usual risks that we already know are out there, right? Like this is not new, right, that we have an inflation issue, that there's a budget deficit issue. These have been known for a while, but gold stocks have kind of, you know, they have their false starts, right? And I think though we're getting to a point now where insiders are signaling, look, these risks are on, you know, front burner again. So yeah, maybe nothing's going to happen. Maybe we're going to dodge the bullets again. Maybe we're going to kick the can down the road again. But maybe we won't this time. And the question is, do you want to be left unhedged to that kind of a situation where you've got a major monetary event happening, and you know your portfolio is not hedged to that? So we announced the rebalancing of the Canadian Insider Index on Sunday, and you can go to index.inkresearch.com to get that announcement. And we've seen some gold miners go in there. Now that's more of an institutional approach towards our applying our process. The Canadian Insider Index has a size and volume limits to get into that index, whereas our top 40 is much smaller. We have a lot smaller stocks. But look, we're doubling our gold stock exposure in the Canadian Insider Index. In the top 40 here, as a retail side, it's got the five names. So, you know, it's punching above its weight, really, in terms of representation in the top 40. So, you know, there's something I think is the risks are materializing a little bit, or potentially materializing on the monetary side. It's not obvious yet. Again, aside from all those risks that I'm sure your listeners are well aware of, but of course, you know, we're all kind of wondering why gold is not seen as a little bit more of a hedge than it has been. But look, you know, there's been distractions. So many of North American investors are back getting into meme stocks and tech stocks. I mean, this is going to take a while for people to sort of stop chasing these tech stocks that are trading, you know, price to sales of 4 times or 5 times. And you know, until it really dawns on them that, yes, you know, the Fed has a problem. It's boxed in. It's actually, there's no sense in kind of trying to guess what the Fed is going to do, because the Fed itself does not know what it's going to do. You know, it's now being held hostage by the inflation numbers and by the U.S. budget deficit and by the twists and turns of the economy. You know, there is just no sense, I think, in kind of trying to front run the Fed, because the Fed is just like all of us trying to find their way in this market. And what's going to determine what happens in this market are things like the war, things like, do people stay in cash, or do they move into more harder assets, such as gold bullion? These will be determined by the risks on the ground and how people see them, how the budget negotiations go in Washington. These are all to be seen, and they cannot be modeled very, very well by looking at past data, manufacturing surveys. Yeah, those can all help, but they're not going to tell you where we're going. They're not going to tell you how the Russia-Ukraine war is going to unfold in the next 3 months. And, you know, a lot of people just want to dismiss the war as being, well, it's in the background, there's nothing we can do about it, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter, because if the U.S. has to double ammunition production in the next year, that's going to have an impact on industrial capacity in the economy. It's going to have an impact on inflation, and that's not captured by Fed models and by ISM surveys and retail sales data. You know, it's just not. So we're in a very different world. It is fog of war, covers more than just the battleground, the battlefield. It's covering the entire economy, and it doesn't get, you know, analysts don't give it the attention and respect it deserves. And part of it is because, you know, Jim, fortunately we haven't had to think about war a lot in the past 30 years, but here it is now. And let's not kid ourselves. The NATO countries, Canada, the U.S., we're deep into this war. We're just not fighting it. We've got people in Ukraine. Ukrainians are fighting this war on, you know, in terms of bodies. But we're right in there with arms and financial commitment. And let's hope it gets resolved quickly. But I don't see, you know, from what I see, and I'm not a war strategist expert, but I'm yet to see the conditions where there's going to be a quick settlement. I hope I'm wrong. Of all the things we've talked about on this broadcast, if I'm wrong about the war, and that there's a quick resolution, that would be great. I'd be happy to be wrong on that.
Could one reason why gold is popular right now, we know governments around the planet are pushing for digital currencies, but the problem with all your money, I mean, realistically, we have digital currency now. All the money you have in the bank is just a bunch of zeros and ones on a computer. But if we technically get into it, your entire wealth could be wiped out in just one hack. We saw with the Rogers telephone fiasco where a third of Canadians couldn't access their money, their bank, couldn't pay for groceries, couldn't buy gasoline for several days. Are people looking at real physical gold? Because if the computers all blink out, that gold will still be there, perhaps buried under your floorboards.
Well, Jim, I mean, you've raised a number of good points there, in terms of the Rogers blackout. Well, you know, it's interesting that apparently Rogers is going to be allowed to get bigger. I know the federal cabinet hasn't approved their merger with Shaw, but, you know, how is it in this country we have a culture that it's okay to let a company that went through that to actually become bigger? Apparently we're on the cusp of that. But anyway, that's kind of an aside. Look, it doesn't have to be a technical blackout. Look what happened a year ago with the truckers' convoy. And look, I'm not taking a side here on whether what the truckers did was right or wrong. It was a political protest, and the government froze the bank accounts of some people that they thought might have been supporting that political movement. Now, we're going to get a report in between now and our next interview. We're going to get a report from the commission that looking into the use of the Emergencies Act, and they will address that freezing of bank accounts. We'll see if it's just a whitewash and a, you know, a politically correct balancing act of trying to look like they're, the, this commission is doing something, but, you know, they don't really do anything. But we'll see. We haven't seen, I don't want to forecast what they're going to do. Let's just see. But, look, it happened, right? People had, there wasn't a lot of Canadians and people, you know, and there'll be a, there's a huge complacency factor. Well, if you don't do anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about. Well, yeah, but, you know, there's, okay, but, let's just say that, you know, I think that, I don't know how many people thought they were doing something wrong who were donating maybe $50 to what they thought, rightly or wrongly, might have been going to support trucker gas tanks, you know, filling up the gas tanks, right? You look, you can say that was a terrible thing and that, you know, those whoever did that was, you know, they shouldn't have been doing it. Well, that's a value judgment. But the point being is that a year from now, 10 years from now, right? Like, who's going to be making those value judgments if we have digital currencies as to what's right and what's wrong? You know, if you haven't paid your parking tickets, right? Like, is that going to be enough to, if we're, central bank digital currency society, is that going to warrant the government shutting down your access to digital currency, right? These are all questions that will need to be asked. Like, what is the threshold, right? And we'll get the first hints of that in this public commission that gives a response, gives its take on the Trudeau government implementation of the Emergencies Act. And, you know, in a sense, it's interesting that they did freeze these bank accounts as part of that act, because now the commission has to address it. So we'll get our first glimpse as to what might happen under a digital currency. Because if this commission says, well, you know, it really wasn't a big deal, the government froze these bank accounts, and well, you know, that's all, you know, to be expected, and that's okay. There was nothing really bad about that. Well, then I think that would be a huge warning sign in terms of the political risks associated with central bank digital currency. So my concern is not as much with technical problems, and as there very well could be at some point. Especially if we allow one or two players to dominate the distribution system, because then if one of them goes down, then yes, you may not be able to pay for your groceries. But there's also the political end of it, and I think we have to really, really pay attention to what comes down from this commission with respect to the Emergencies Act and also the response by Ottawa, the government, the opposition to that. So it's really important, and it's so you know that comes back to gold. So like, why wouldn't you have some exposure to hedge these risks? Like what I just talked about, I'm trying to outlay the risks around it, not personal opinions in terms of whether it was right or whether it was wrong. But, you know, it's a risk if we do bring in these central bank digital currencies, the ability to shut you off from the financial system is even greater. And we've already seen how the government can use the existing networks to do that, right? I mean, that's just the fact. Those are just facts. There were people who were frozen out of the system. There weren't that many of them. And one may have a view that it was justified or not justified. But the question is, you know, does that power, do we start to see a creeping expansion of that power? Look at the big picture on the sanctions, right? Like, U.S. government, is now using its dominance of the U.S. dollar to be able to impose sanctions on what it deems as bad behavior. And you could go down the list and talk about each one, but the fact of the matter is these sanctions have grown over time, right? So that this isn't to say that they shouldn't be doing it or that this is bad or this is, or not bad, but the fact is that once they figured out that they have this huge clout with the sanctions, right, they're using it, right? Anyway, you could say it's quite rational. Well, once governments find that they, now that they have the clout to freeze bank accounts or use central bank digital currencies to enforce rules, how far will they take it? We don't know the answers to that. Those are risks, right? Maybe they'll be responsible. Maybe it's nothing to worry about. Then you don't need any gold. If that's what you believe, you know, everything's fine. But if, you know, you believe that maybe that there could be some abuses of that system, even as a risk, not, I'm not saying it will happen, as a risk, then that's part of the case for gold. And yeah, I'm looking forward to see, I think I'm looking forward to seeing the public order, the public, the Emergencies Act Commission report. Since I'm looking forward to it, but, we were going to get it, so it'll be important to review. Let's just, yeah, leave it at that, and let's hope it's, hopefully we're pleasantly surprised in terms of, the accountability that, is being called for in terms of the use of those very powerful sanctions on people, because, you know, we certainly don't, anyway, everyone has to make their own assessment in terms of, how they should be used and whether gold is, a hedge against, where we could be going on that front. We'll have to see. But, anyway, at this point, insiders seem to be suggesting that, that gold, is going to be considered more as a hedge than it has been in the past. And, we'll see if that works out in the months ahead here.
Back in the 1930s, President Roosevelt seized everyone's gold in the U.S. unless it was jewelry, and a lot of people were busy pounding their bars into gold chains.
Well, yeah, and there's always workarounds that people try to do, right? And that's the cat and mouse game. And gold may have its day here. If more and more Western investors start to anticipate that they need a hedge, in terms of where we're going, either through not just monetary sanctions, but just monetary inflation, because that's just another, you know, form of taxation, confiscation, right, is inflation. So, right now, I think a lot of, investor, particularly institutional investors, are wanting to believe this central bank, narrative that, oh, we're going to get inflation under control. Look, Tiff Macklem was out today, the day we're recording this, you know, forecasting that inflation is going to go back to target by 2024, like next year. Okay, well, you know, he hasn't done so well on his predictions on inflation in the past, but I wish him well on his most recent round, because that would be great. We'll see if it gets there, and certainly institutional investors want to believe him, but I think more and more are starting to hedge their bets. At least that's what insiders seem to be hinting at, that and gold is really one of the few alternatives, especially if you're an institutional investor, because the authorities, the Western authorities, have made it incredibly difficult to invest if you're an institution in Bitcoin. So that is a difficult option, even if you wanted to do that. And but gold so far has escaped the attention of regulators. But maybe next time it'll be gold's turn. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me back, Jim.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca. You can find his website at CanadianInsider.com. If you have any questions for Ted or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.